Data doesn't speak for itself. It needs a storyteller. It's a terrific quote from the master of messaging, Nancy Duarte, and it comes in the introduction to her excellent book, Data Story. Duarte is one of my communication heroes, a great exponent of the humanized and storified approach that I've been harping on about for many years. In this episode, we look at some wonderful examples of data being used skillfully and intelligently by presenters who know how to bring numbers to life. We'll explore how to tell the story behind the statistic, giving meaning to what can otherwise be cold, abstract numbers, which leave people unmoved and disengaged. My name's Andrew Thorpe. Welcome to Leaning Forward. I have a confession to make. I'm not a numbers person. I never enjoyed maths at school. I've never connected with the world of finance. Spreadsheets leave me cold. And I really don't enjoy doing my accounts. But that doesn't mean that I believe numbers don't matter. Quite the reverse. I can see that they have a crucial role to play in decision making. You only have to look at the way that data has driven public health policy during the pandemic. The phrase, next slide, please, has gained prominence at the hands of Professor Whitty as he presents the latest COVID statistics during the Downing Street briefings. The numbers are an incredibly important tool for managing any public health crisis. Just think of all the data that we're currently considering. Infection rates, hospitalizations, mortality, vaccinations, levels of immunity, crowd size limitations, and the astronomical cost of the furlough scheme. And I have to admit that since receiving a Garmin watch from my kids for Christmas, I've become a little obsessed with how many steps I've taken during the day. I have been known to wander up and down my apartment before bedtime, because I'm at 9,875 steps, and that simply won't do. No, my beef isn't with numbers per se, but with the way that numbers are communicated, especially in the business world. Too often they're not accompanied by a story, and in my opinion they cannot and do not do the job on their own. If you simply present facts and figures, you're doing half a job. Tell us more. Explain the significance of those numbers, the story behind them. Why did they spike in November? How come our recent campaign didn't produce an increase in sales? Why are our margins down in the last quarter? What makes you confident about the projected figures for the next year? Perhaps there's an issue with confidence. Maybe you're thinking, it's not my place to interpret the data. I'm just asked to present the numbers. It's for others to make something of it. But if you've been involved in compiling the data, the chances are that you're well placed to give some meaning or interpretation to the numbers. You've probably spent more time than anyone looking at them, and it's likely that you've seen some patterns or gained some intel from the original source of those figures. So I'd like to explore this topic and share some powerful examples of data being communicated in a creative and effective way. This might be in a formal platform like a stand-up presentation, or perhaps in a meeting, or even a document where you're having to convey this information. One technique to consider is not using numbers at all. The late Professor Hans Rosling was a master of presentation, a statistician by trade with a particular interest in public health data. In his wonderful book, Factfulness, he shows a series of pictures on one page that convey the relative levels of oral hygiene in countries of different levels of prosperity. And he does so by showing toothbrushes. Yes, toothbrushes. So category one countries use a couple of fingers for a toothbrush. And category two, you'd have a single toothbrush, but shared by everyone in the household. In category three, a toothbrush each for the members of the household. And in the wealthiest countries, we go electric. It's such a clever technique. The toothbrushes communicate so much because we're already familiar with those images. And I'm not saying that you wouldn't back these pictures up with statistics, but the initial impact is so much greater. Journalist David Epstein uses a different approach in his 2014 TED Talk. His theme was the performance of athletes and the degree to which they're becoming faster, stronger, better over the years. And a bit like Rosling, he uses comparison by reminding us that the 1930s equivalent of a runner's starting blocks was a trowel, a gardening trowel, because athletes dug themselves footholds in the cinder track in those days. But one technique that I really love is the way that he communicates the narrow difference between first and last place in the 100 metres. We're used to seeing a table of times with precise numerical measurements in milliseconds that separate the athletes. But Epstein uses a different method to convey the narrow difference between first and last place. It's an auditory approach. A blip is used to represent a runner crossing the line, so it sounds a bit like a brr. It's unusual. It appeals to a different sense, and it's extremely effective because we see, my goodness me, is that the difference between first and last? It's hardly anything. And static numbers somehow don't convey any sense of movement, and I think the blips do. When it comes to presentations, I'm a fan of the grabber opening, starting with something out of the ordinary that grabs the attention of the audience. Jonica Schmitz opens her 2012 TED Talk with the line, "I came here today to warn you about the dangers of ice cream." She's a mathematician and a science journalist, and her talk is about the way that we can mistake correlation for causality. She displays a chart which shows an apparent correlation between deaths by drowning and sales of ice cream. But we'd be wrong to assume a causal relationship. Yes, both seem to be connected in some way, but the common denominator is actually hot weather. We consume more ice cream when the mercury rises, but you also get more people swimming in lakes and rivers. She's linking numbers to human behaviour and reminding us that interpreting data isn't that straightforward. Another option for the attention-grabbing opening is to simply display a few figures, maybe just three or four in big font size on your opening slide, and then invite the audience to guess what they mean. Give them a sense of the theme or topic for sure, but those numbers will relate in some way to where you want to go with this talk. Create some intrigue by putting a limited amount of information on the screen, and then one by one reveal what those numbers actually mean. Use this as a way to get into your content. I listened to a podcast last year about COVID statistics in the US, and the entire episode was based around this very technique, each number being the starting point for explaining different aspects of the pandemic, almost like chapter headings. We're going to take a quick break now to hear from a fellow storyteller and podcaster, Stefano Cappuccione. He's a wizard with words, a collector of tales, and I will thoroughly recommend his show to you, Storytelling with Puck. And here he is to tell you more.
The story I'll read for you.
They once were three little girls.
This is a dream that I think really shows how we view transformation.
Dreams, emotions, empathy, connection, stories. Storytelling with Puck. Find your next tantalizing tale on your favorite podcast platform or at puckcreations.com/storytellingwithpuckpodcast.
Thanks, Stefano. And now back to our theme of presenting data. I think one of the most interesting aspects of data is to understand the psychology that led to this figure or that trend. The UK government currently receives guidance on the pandemic from the SAGE committee. That's the Scientific Advisory Group for Emergencies. Now, you'd expect your fair share of public health experts and mathematical modellers in this group, but you've also got behavioural psychologists, people whose job it is to anticipate how the public will react to government directives around social distancing or wearing face masks, getting vaccinated. So if you are presenting data and you're able to give some insight behind an upward or a downward trend, for example, that's impressive. It shows that you've dug a little deeper than most. Perhaps you've interviewed some of the people that those numbers represent. If you, for example, hosted a popular online training event, ask people who enrolled why they found it so attractive. If a recent campaign really failed to produce results, try to discover what went wrong. You may have heard about nudge theory. It's a concept which came to prominence in 2008, when a couple of American scholars wrote a book about it. Now, nudging is a way to influence behaviour and decision-making, and it contrasts with more conventional approaches like legislation or education. It's been embraced by governments who want people to fill in their tax returns on time or complete the census. They might change the design of a form to improve levels of compliance. And you also get unusual examples like a fly that's designed into the ceramic of a urinal. And it works because men like to aim at things. And in Stockholm, they transformed a staircase in a tube station into piano keys. And each step played a different note so that climbing the steps rather than, say, taking the escalator became more fun and more popular. So they effectively nudged the public to exercise more. There's a really interesting story in the book Freakonomics by the Stevens, that's Levitt and Dubner. And economists did an experiment in Israel. It was in Haifa in Israel some years ago to see if it was possible to get parents to pick up their kids from nursery on time. Parents get delayed in traffic and that causes issues for the staff. And they worked with 10 daycare centres and established that on average there were, in normal times, 8 late pickups per week. And then they implemented a fine system, the equivalent of $3 every time a parent was more than 10 minutes late. And you'd assume that the fine would be an incentive to get there on time. But oddly enough, instances of tardiness went up, more than doubling from 8 a week to an average of 20 per week. But when you think about it, it kind of makes sense, because the fine effectively gave the parents permission to be late. It's okay, I'll pay my money and I'm off the hook. It's almost like the system allowed for them to be late. The bigger incentive, the one that actually existed before the fining system began, was simply not wanting to let the staff down. So if you can explain the psychology behind the numbers, you're giving a level of insight that really sets you apart from a mere data dumper. I mentioned Nancy Duarte at the start. She's an expert in visual storytelling, and I recommend her book Data Story. It's the most comprehensive guide that I've come across for visually communicating numbers. There's a keep it simple theme that runs throughout the book. So, for example, everyone understands a straightforward bar or pie or line chart. So don't try to be too fancy so that, you know, some sort of fancy designed chart simply confuses people. They can't make sense of it. Giving your chart a headline means that you're helping the audience know what they need to focus on when you're presenting, let's say, a pie chart. 25-year-olds at most risk of catching COVID. That could be a headline as an example. She talks about attaching the data to something that we can relate to, like an analogy. So you know the kind of thing. It's the equivalent of 3 football pitches. Now, that particular example is maybe a little cliched, but Bill Bryson, the writer, does it more elegantly, I think, in his book about science, which is called A Short History of Nearly Everything. And there's a section on cosmology, and he interviews a member of the clergy in Australia, I think just outside Sydney. And this gentleman is a reverend who happens to have a facility for spotting supernovae. He's become a bit of a legend in this field. And to give us an idea of how hard it is to discover one of these, Bryson invites us to imagine a trestle table covered in a black cloth. And now sprinkle salt on that table. Repeat the process so that you've got 1,500 tables laid end to end, each sprinkled with salt. So spotting a supernova is the equivalent of identifying a single specific grain of salt on all those tables. Now, I love this. It paints a really clear picture in our mind, and we appreciate the magnitude of this achievement that the reverend seems to have this skill in. The other thing that we relate to as human beings is conflict. And maybe the most obvious one is between good and evil. And as Nancy Duarte puts it, you need to identify the hero and the adversary in the data. So, for example, the customer might be the goodie, but perhaps the problem that they face in accessing your product, because this is evidenced in poor sales figures, that problem is the antagonist or the baddie. Now, I'm not suggesting that you actually use terms like good versus evil, goodies and baddies, but it is possible to frame your message in such a way that it rallies people around your cause. It draws them together to combat the problem, which is perhaps holding back sales. I want to finish with one final point about presenting data. Numbers help us to make informed decisions. Well-sourced data helps us avoid guesswork. It means that we're not relying simply on anecdotal evidence. But on their own, numbers are cold and abstract. So whether it's a pandemic or a natural disaster, we often hear figures thrown around. The number of injuries, fatalities, the economic cost of what's happened. And commentators might say, and of course that's lower than we feared. And the numbers might give us some kind of strategic understanding of what happened and help us to compare it with other similar incidents and perhaps identify upward or downward trends. But I think there's a danger that we become rather desensitized to what we're being told. It's all rather abstract and dehumanized. We need to remember that there's a real human story behind each of these numbers. Behind every fatality, there's a personal tragedy. Behind every COVID infection, there's a moment of interaction that led someone to catch the virus and then have to deal with the implications of that. Behind every sales figure, there's a decision that's been made by a human being to invest in this product at this time, and their motivation for doing so might be very surprising indeed. So my message to you is that by humanizing and storifying the data that you present, Not only will you sound more interesting and engaging, you're also showing a degree of empathy and a deeper appreciation of what those numbers actually mean. Aim to bring these numbers to life. The TED website profiles Hans Rosling, one of my presenting heroes, and describes how he made data sing. And the wonderful speaker Brené Brown reminds us that stories are data with soul. That's all for now from me. Don't forget to check out Storytelling with Puck. You can find it where you normally listen to your podcasts or at puckcreations.com/storytellingwithpuckpodcast. Thank you again for tuning into Leaning Forward. Do join us again next time.